Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's
About Time for True Crime.
Hi.
Hey, listeners.
How are y'all? Happy day. Happy Tuesday if you're listening on drop day.
Happy day that ends in Y.
Happy time to be alive and listen to true crime.
Thank you guys for being here. We have an episode for you today, but before we get into today's episode, I have some sad news to share. We try to be real on the podcast and talk about things that are really going on, and this is real life, and we're all cat lovers here,
yeah. Or
animal lovers here at the very least, because our ATFTC family is amazing, and we connect with a lot of you guys over our love of pets.
Yeah, our pod pets.
And very sad to say that my cat Cookie passed away.
Yeah.
She was 17 years old. 17. Like, this cat could drive.
Yes. Oh my God, she could almost vote.
I know. She lived one hell of a life. But again, I know that our listeners are as much animal lovers as we are. And so, you know, these are still important things to talk about, even though they're not particularly happy. We adopted Cookie when I was young. She was absolutely my baby. And I hope that that explains her name a little bit, because yes. I was young and I did name her.
Allie was a youth, like a true youth, elementary school-ish, I think. I didn't know you then, but I am the keeper of the secrets. And by that, I mean I am Patrick with SpongeBob's holiday Christmas photo in his little box that he laughs at. Except for me, instead of SpongeBob at the holiday party, it is Allie ugly crying over how happy she is to get this cat.
Oh yeah, she was a birthday present to me, which I am very much against getting like pets as gifts for people, but this was absolutely 100% so welcomed, and yes. I was a kid and my parents were also taking that on too, because I wasn't exactly like working a 9-to-5 to provide for this cat.
Yeah. But I think if the people providing for the cat are the ones getting the cat as the gift, you're fine.
Correct. And so I was so over the moon to have her, and then I just instantly turned into a puddle of like, I love her so much already. Like, I just held her and she's like kind of looking at me like, who are you and why are you crying in my ear right now? But because I was young, I named her Cookie. I was like absolutely determined on either naming her Cookie or Muffin. Uh-huh. And
my
parents
very
gently, I must have been a fat kid or something, I was like, food, gotta name it out. But they like gently nudged me in the direction of Cookie, and which was good, so that I didn't have a cat that would have a very not great nickname.
Yeah.
So, but Cookie absolutely fit her. And she did kind of look like a Snicker. She was a calico and she was fat as hell, if you were wondering.
Yes. She's just eating her food and getting all fat and sassy.
She absolutely did. She was such a bitch at first. Like, okay, you know the kinds of cats that, like, if they lay on you, you're like, oh my God.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, she's here. Don't move. Like, and you'd, like, reach for the remote or blink the wrong way. And she'd be like, oh, I'm done. And she'd get up and walk away. That was her for, like, the longest time.
Oh.
And then in her, like, older age, she just stopped caring about the things that would normally make her want to get up.
Aww.
To the point where she damn near harassed you to, like, lay on your lap and snuggle. Yeah. And she really wasn't even, like, a lap cat. She was, like, a lay facing you up on your chest as close as she could be to you.
Yeah.
She'd wrap her paws around and hug you.
Aww.
She was the absolute sweetest, most lovey bug in the whole world, and I'm not going to cry. But she also had facial expressions that ranged from, like, absolutely thinking of the world to you to, like, being disappointed in you as a person. Like, she had range. Like, you'd get a side eye and you're like, what did I say to you? But mostly it was all love.
Yeah.
There was not a heartbreak or bad day or loss of a loved one or anything that I ever had to go through alone, because she was there.
Yeah.
But also she was there for all of the joyful memories too. She was there. I think I graduated middle school, if you call that a graduation, and high school, and college, and got engaged, and got married, and I did all of that. This girl, we grew up together.
Yes.
We did all that together. There's not anything I have a memory of really before her, in a way, like,
right.
You know, the things that you really can remember, and it's been so long and everything, but she's always been there. And she's always been my girl. And funny enough, I actually have her to thank for the cats that I have now.
Yes.
Because my now husband had like no use for cats before, had never had one before. It was definitely like, I'm a dog guy, nothing else. And then he met Cookie and he was like, that is a fat cat. And I'm like, no, yes. you're right, but hold on. And then he sat down and she checked him out immediately and like immediately deemed that he was worthy and laid on his lap.
Fucking
like,
guy.
Like laid on him. And he was like, okay, that's pretty cool. So then he came to me and he was like, I think we need to get a cat. That would have not happened had it not been for Cookie.
And he is such a cat dad. Like, he just fucking loves those cats.
That's why we have Mia and Oliver. Mia, who you've probably heard, has like the very cute meow. If you ever hear a cat in the background of our recording, it's always her. And we have Oliver now, who's a little shit. And usually hear me yelling at him to stop that, get down, get your feet out of the water bowl.
If you hear things like that, constant munching while we're recording, that's almost always him, even though she's usually the one trying to munch. That, and also if you hear me go, oh, sorry, under my breath, it's also because he likes to hang out with us and I do put my feet up and sometimes realize that I put my feet up in his space.
And he's just gonna have to deal with it.
Yeah. He doesn't mind, I don't think.
No, but we love them dearly and we have Cookie to thank because I would not have ever gotten my husband on board with getting a cat. The fact that he was like, we need to get one. Because Cookie set the standard. She was definitely my girl and then turned out to be like my dad's cat after I was out of the house and everything. And
dads and the pets, they say they don't want.
Oh, yeah. But she ended up being entirely, totally his cat.
Yeah.
Like she had eyes for him and it was the sweetest thing. So all of that to say, it's a somber day here in the ATFTC fam, but we gave her 17 amazing, she gave us 17 amazing years. She was my little girl and I will miss her, but I love her so much and we were so lucky. So I bring this up also to say that if you were considering donating to our podcast, we'd actually ask that you might consider donating to a cause near and dear to our hearts.
Yes, please.
I hope you'll consider a local animal shelter or the ASPCA. Cookie was a shelter cat. Her litter was actually found outside with no mom in sight, and she was so ill she nearly died when she was just a baby.
Yeah.
So if you're feeling extra generous, or as the holidays approach and you want to give to a cause that is really in need of that, I really hope that you will consider our animal friends who can't help themselves.
Yeah. And if you're going through all of your blankets as the winter comes up and you're like, man, I just love the TJ Maxx blankets, but I have 1 trillion. Try donating some of those too, old towels, stuff like that. That's kind of household goods, but not quite like what you think of as pet supplies.
Shelter cats love a good TJ Maxx blanket. Ugh, can confirm.
And they deserve it.
I've done some polling. The numbers are up.
It's a 100% success rate. And these are unprecedented numbers.
It's never been done before.
The stats girly in me is quaking.
So that is our intro for today. Thank you guys so much for tuning in. And if you are a skipper, you should stop skipping because we are going to get into the episode.
Yoo-hoo! Pod's on.
There you go.
Hey.
As you probably know from the title, we are talking about the man who killed Halloween, which is
fucking rude.
I know. Pretty topical and relevant considering as this episode drops, it is the week of Halloween.
Spooky Halloween.
Yep, you got it.
Thanks.
So we are going to rewind the clock back to Halloween 1974.
Ooh.
The holiday began as it had every year before. The kids were excited all day to dress up and go trick-or-treating. Who wouldn't?
Hell yes.
But we're actually going to zoom into Ronald O'Brien. He was 30 years old. He took his 2 children to a friend's house that evening before trick-or-treating. This friend was Jim Bates. So they went to his house. They had dinner all together before they took their kids out for trick-or-treating.
They didn't have like a hotel or anything, right?
Nope, no Bates Motel here.
Oh, okay. Whew.
Yeah, believe it or not, Jim Bates is actually not the star of our show today.
Love to hear it.
But Ronald just might be.
Ooh.
Ronald had 2 kids. He had 8-year-old Timothy and 5-year-old Elizabeth.
Aww.
And they're 8 and 5. I feel like those are the best years to go trick-or-treating.
Yes.
And, oh my God, I don't know what they were wearing, but they were so excited. I mean, what kid isn't? You're going to get a bunch of candy. You're going to get to have fun. It's like probably till like 7 or 8 p.m. So like you think you're staying up late, you're out late.
Right. It's dark by the end of it, which is huge when you're a kid because it's like I stayed up past nighttime.
Your dad probably waited at the end of the driveway and like let you go up to the door all by yourself because you are so grown up.
And so mature.
Absolutely. And that's what they did. The kids kind of walked ahead of them. And again, we're back in the 70s, so it is a different time.
Oh, yeah.
If the parents even went at all, it was really not as hands-on as we know it to be today. But, I mean, they were walking up to every single house, knock, 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 trick-or-treat, give me your candy, please. And then they got to a house that didn't have lights on.
Ooh.
Which was fine, but usually, to me, I feel like it's customary that that's a sign that the people inside don't want to participate or
right.
can't or aren't home or whatever. And maybe the kids knew that. Maybe they didn't. They could have just not cared. But they did knock anyway. No one answered. So they moved on to the next house.
Right. Makes sense.
Ronald caught up to them a little bit up the road and said that if they'd only waited a little bit longer, they'd actually have gotten candy from that house with the light off. And he said that, you know, the guy didn't open the door all the way, but he did give him 5 pixie sticks.
Oh.
So these pixie sticks were massive. They were like 21 inches long.
Oh, I know the ones.
You know the one.
I know the ones. My parents loathe the ones.
They are whispered about in hushed tones. Yes. He had actually gotten these 5 pixie sticks and didn't give, like, you know, his kids all of them. He gave them out.
Okay.
So he gave 2 to, you know, 1 to each of his kids. He gave some to the kids that they were out with. He gave some to like some neighborhood kids. So
yeah, the group.
Yeah, he handed them out. And they continued their night. They went to each house. They got candy. They headed home. And after trick-or-treating was over, when the kids got home, they of course were begging to have some of their candy.
Duh.
That's like the best part of the night. What are you talking about? Who wouldn't? Ronald told them that they could each have 1 piece. Like, you get 1 before bed. And of course, you know, bets are off tomorrow, but you get right. 1. You can't be on a sugar rush and go to sleep. It's school night. So, daughter chooses a piece. And then his son, Timothy, did. But Timothy chose a lollipop.
Okay.
And the dad was like, you do not have time to finish this tonight. Like, you need to pick a smaller piece of candy.
Because the lollipop's going to require like 20 to 30 minutes of sucking on it. Yeah.
Correct. So then Timothy actually tore open the pixie stick that he'd gotten because, I mean, he's like, well, if I can't have a lollipop, I'm going to have this.
Let me have this giant sugar stick.
Exactly. And he was having trouble getting the powder out of it. Like, you know what a pixie stick is, you guys, yeah. right? Like the long tube, plastic tube full of just like sugar and cancer.
Yep. The best.
So he ripped off the top of the pixie stick and he's trying to have it and it's not coming out. Like, it was all stuck at the other end of it. And so he kind of had to, like, roll it a little bit. So Ronald goes over and, like, helps it. You kind of have to, like, tap it, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. Flick it a little. I don't know. And do something. All right.
Oh, okay.
But the candy finally came out or whatever. So it was good. But then Timothy was like, that tasted really bitter and really bad.
Oh.
And, like, to an 8-year-old, a pixie stick should not be...
No.
Bitter and like taste not good. So the kid was like, ooh, I didn't like that. So Ronald made him some Kool-Aid to like get the taste out of his mouth because it had lasted after a few minutes had gone by.
Yeah.
So he drank the Kool-Aid and Timothy went to bed.
They're always drinking the Kool-Aid, these kids, I tell ya.
But within minutes, Timothy was very ill.
Oh.
His stomach started hurting like nothing he'd ever felt before. And again, he's 8 years old. He just knows that he's in a lot of pain and does not know why his belly hurts so bad.
Right.
And he ran to the bathroom. He began vomiting, aww, like violently. And then he started convulsing. So his dad, Ronald, ran to his aid. I mean, his kid is very unwell. And then Timothy started seizing.
Oh my gosh.
And then he went limp in Ronald's arms. So first responders arrived right away. I believe his wife called 911. And Timothy was transported by ambulance to the local hospital. But before they could even get there, the 8-year-old was pronounced dead.
Oh my gosh. That's also fast, too.
It was within minutes. Like, he had the candy, didn't like it, and had Kool-Aid, went to bed, not even in bed a few minutes before he ran to the bathroom.
Wow.
Went limp. And I think first responders got there. He was still unconscious, but they weren't able to revive him in any way. Wow. And so he died on the way to the hospital. Investigators placed a call to the chief medical examiner of a nearby county because they needed his input, because this just didn't seem right.
Yeah.
And surprisingly, as they have him on the phone, this guy encouraged them to do something that seemed really weird to them at the time. He asked what the boy's breath smelled like, and he asked them to go up and like smell near his mouth. And they came back and said he smelled like almonds.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say that.
And with that, the medical examiner said that the boy died of cyanide poisoning.
Yep.
His autopsy actually proved that he had, in fact, been poisoned with potassium cyanide.
Wow.
According to the CDC, small amounts of cyanide can cause chest pains and chest tightness, dizziness, weakness or confusion, eye pain or eye tearing, excitement, restlessness, breathing problems, rapid or slow breathing, rapid or slow heart rate, headache, nausea, and vomiting. And that's the tiniest amounts, like a speck of cyanide.
Right.
For a little bit more, like a higher quantity cyanide, this poisoning can be coma, high blood pressure, loss of consciousness, lung injury, seizures, or death. So you tell me what you think his symptoms matched more, a little bit or a lot of it?
I would say a lot of it, and I would also venture to remind people that what a little bit could be to an adult could be a shitload to an 8-year-old.
Exactly. Survivors of cyanide poisoning can experience brain damage, heart damage, and nerve damage.
Holy shit.
So this is very, very serious, very dangerous. And of course, alarm bells went off immediately. This is an 8-year-old child dead by poisoning on Halloween night. He was a perfectly healthy, perfectly happy young boy who left for trick-or-treating completely fine and was dead before bedtime.
Wow.
How does that happen? So this investigation began right away. They needed to know where Timothy had gone, with who, did he eat, did he drink anything, when did his symptoms start, and who could have benefited from this child being dead.
Right.
How does this kid have enemies? He's 8. Santa's still real. Like, life is good.
Yeah.
They had to wonder, is this an accident or could it be something much worse? Of course, Ronald was interviewed. He was the parent that had spent most of the night with him. He was also the one who held him as he convulsed and as he went limp.
Oh.
Ronald was a seemingly successful optician. He and his wife, Danine, had been together for quite a few years. They loved their kids. Ronald was asked to tell them everything that they did that day, and he summarized it. He said they went trick-or-treating with friends. They came back after. Kids wanted candy. They could only have one each. Timothy chose the pixie stick, and to Ronald's knowledge, that was the only candy that Timothy had.
Yeah.
You know, he told them they could only have one. He thinks that his son only had one. But panic spread through their whole community fast. Well, they lived in Deer Park, Texas, and they had gone trick-or-treating, I think, in Pasadena, Texas.
Okay.
So these two communities, I think, were like 15, 20 minutes apart. But word traveled quickly, and parents were like, okay, well, it's a child is dead after trick-or-treating. And they kind of connected the dots pretty quickly. Parents weren't letting their kids have any Halloween candy. And after determining that it really was a poisoning and that it almost definitely came from Halloween candy, the parents from all over were actually encouraged by law enforcement to turn over their candy. So parents were already kind of thinking, like, we're not letting our kids do this. And then the police released the statement and they're like, yep, confirmed poisoning in Halloween candy. If you wanted to get it checked, you know, we don't think you should let your kids have it. You should drop it off here.
Right.
And we'll have to test everything because, like, now this is an active investigation. So, like, thousands of pieces of candy, like, poured into this, like, not very large police department.
The sweetest evidence room they've ever had, certainly.
For sure. So, like, they're up to their ears, basically, in candy. And surprisingly, like, none of them were positive for anything, which was great. But also really weird.
Yeah, because then why is one?
Right. And so the police start pushing him a little bit more because they're like, pixie sticks. Like, why that? If we think that's all he's had, that seems weird. So they're like, okay, where did you get these from? And Ronald could not quite recall the house that he got them from.
Huh.
But he did say that, you know, he had five of them. He had given one to each of his kids. He gave two to the kids that they were with. I think it was Mark and Kimberly Bates. And then the last one he gave to a local boy, or like one of the local boys that he knew that attended their same church.
Right.
So the pressure was on now to retrieve these four other pixie sticks.
Right.
Like, okay, we think this has got to be what it is. This is the only thing found in his system. You supposedly got five. We need all of them.
Well, and not for nothing, but pixie sticks have that unique ability to be opened and resealed because everything is just loose powder.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a Twix where you'd notice if it was dipped in something weird.
Right. Or like a chocolate bar where you'd notice if like some of it had been missing and replaced with something else. Like that right. is very odd. But luckily, Elizabeth hadn't eaten hers yet. So this is Timothy's sister, the 5-year-old.
Ooh, okay.
Thankfully, she hadn't had it. So they got that one. And they essentially found all but one. The one that was given to the boy from their church.
Okay.
They couldn't track that one down. And they're reaching out to the parents, and they let the parents know. And they freaked out immediately. They ran to their son into his room. They found this child fast asleep in his bed, clutching the pixie stick in one of his hands. He had fallen asleep trying to open it.
Oh my gosh.
But it was stapled shut and he didn't have the strength in his tiny little fingers to open the staple.
Stapled?
Now, some of you are ahead of me.
Sorry.
Stapled? Yes. Very Shit. Odd. They don't come out the factory stapled. They're sealed.
Yeah.
They found that in these pixie sticks, the top 2 inches of the powdered candy had been removed from them and they had been replaced with cyanide.
Oh my gosh.
So what stood between this child's life and death was like the strength and like his willpower to open this pixie stick, and he damn near just fell asleep trying.
he gave it everything he had in the tank.
All of it.
Oh my
gosh. But that's what saved his life. So his parents see him and he's not moving, and they're like, their heart drops, as you can imagine. Right.
Especially seeing him clutching the thing.
Like thinking he'd already had it.
Oh.
And he just hadn't been able to open it. So now they've got them all. They have the one that Timothy had, and then the four others. And they all had been tampered with. They all had been stapled.
Oh my gosh.
Which was so odd. And again, they're not used by the manufacturer.
No.
Staples are not a part of the pixie stick kind of thing.
No.
So these were very, very obviously messed with.
That childhood classic, the pixie stick you always needed the staple remover to get into?
Yeah, I remember that one, don't you?
Ugh.
The amount of poison in Timothy's candy was enough to kill 2 grown adults.
Holy shit.
And the remaining ones had enough to kill 3 to 4 adults.
So he had the least amount.
He was in so much pain. It was overkill. It was essentially overkill.
Right.
For what would have been needed to take Timothy's life. Like, this was, whoever did this made damn sure whoever ate this would not survive.
Yeah, they weren't coming back.
Police ended up growing more firm with Ronald, though, because by this point, he still hadn't identified the house. And all of this information is coming through. You know, all of these things are happening at once. They're searching for the other one. They're trying to figure out where it could have come from. They're getting the results from Timothy's autopsy. Like, all these things are happening simultaneously. And they're kind of pushing Ronald because he seems fine. Like, he's appropriately, you know, quote unquote, grieving.
Right.
He's got, you know, the right amount of like shock and surprise, if you will. He's also a parent who is trying to stay strong for his daughter and his wife. So, you know, he seems to be balancing these things well, but they're like, how could you not know
right
where you got these from? Because you're the one that got them.
And you're the adult.
Exactly. They ended up actually taking him back to the neighborhood.
Wow.
So they'd done it already, right? So they did it immediately. They were like, show us the house. And he's like kind of walking around and he didn't know. And I should also mention that this wasn't his neighborhood they were in. He right. lived in Deer Park, but I think they went trick-or-treating in Pasadena, Texas again. So this is about 15 minutes from him. This is like, I think, Jim Bates' neighborhood.
Right. That would make sense. You go over to their house.
Yeah, and then you just trick-or-treat over there. Maybe the houses are closer. Maybe you can hit more of them.
Or maybe they're the ones that have the full-size candy bars.
And you always hit that one first.
Thank you.
So it isn't out of the realm of possibility, at least to me, that for, you know, a little over an hour on a dark, rainy night, and it was raining the night they went trick-or-treating, that he took his kids to his friend's house. They went trick-or-treating in that neighborhood. And, you know, he couldn't quite remember which house wasn't lit up because this wasn't his neighborhood.
Right. And it's also like you're trying to keep track of your kids. You're trying to make sure everything's going okay. You follow around. But also at some point, it's, I don't know, if the only thing that stood out about this house was that they were the ones without their lights on, then you'd kind of have to recreate that for that to be an exact replica. But you're still like, you're still an adult. You're probably not that crazy lost in a neighborhood. How many houses can you hit with a five-year-old?
No, and not only that, but because it was actually raining, they only hit two streets.
Oh.
So it was growing more and more suspicious that he couldn't figure it out. And I will say this. You can bet your butt I would be doing everything in my power. And you know how I never say, I know what I would do in this situation? I know what I would do in this situation is that I would make sure I found that house that I went to. Even
oh, yeah.
if I couldn't remember the house, I would go up to every single house and look at the person or their hand or the front step or something to remind me. I'd get trespassed. But
oh,
if
yeah.
my child were dead, I'm
What's
finding out where
charge?
This
yeah.
I'm figuring out where this came from.
Ugh, yeah.
And I imagine I'd be at their house maybe like trying to force my way into the house if I could figure it out and wanting to put hands on the person in that house. Because they stole my baby from me. I think that you would have to pry me off of the door to not get after the person who did that to my child. But instead, Ronald, much calmer than I would be, just said he didn't know. And when he said this, investigators just didn't buy it anymore. It was just starting to get too suspicious.
Right.
They pressed him a bit harder, and then miraculously, his memory was, in fact, jogged.
Oh.
He pointed out the house from which a man's hairy arm had reached out and given him pixie sticks, and whose face he never saw. So he couldn't describe the man that gave him this candy. He could only describe that it was a man's hairy arm that gave him this candy, and that no one else was around. The kids had already moved on to the next house. It had been the one with the lights off.
Okay.
This was the exchange.
I don't buy it.
Right. So they confirmed the name of the man who lived there.
Mm-hmm.
They went to this man's place of work, which was the William P. Hobby Airport in Houston, and arrested him for the murder of 8-year-old Timothy O'Brien.
What?
They detained him in front of all of his colleagues.
That's a bit hasty.
This man, Mr. Melvin, was an air traffic controller, and he claimed that he worked Halloween night until 11 p.m., so he wasn't even home. And 200 people confirmed his alibi that he was, in fact, at work the whole time. And that's a pretty important job. I don't know if you know what air traffic controllers
yeah.
do, but that's kind of important, and I think it'd be very clear if he wasn't there.
Also, would explain why the light was fucking off.
Yes, because he wasn't there. So couldn't have been him. And he had his wife and daughter at home, but they'd actually turned out the lights earlier on because they'd run out of candy.
Oh.
And so they didn't want to come to the door anymore for
yeah.
trick-or-treaters when they didn't have anything to give them. And Ronald was adamant that it was a man's hand and
right.
It wasn't Mr. Melvin's wife or young daughter.
Well, that wouldn't be a hairy man's hand.
Wouldn't be. And if it wasn't suspicious already, it got suspicious right quick because Ronald's history was concerning.
Oh.
For starters, this man struggled to keep a job. Jobs are like water, and this guy is an oily fuck, apparently, because in recent years, he had had more than 20 jobs.
Huh?
Some sources say 5 years, 20 jobs. Others say 10, but regardless, I think it's probably closer to 10. That seems more reasonable.
But let's say 10 years, 20 jobs.
Over every 6 months.
I hate doing job applications. Mm-hmm. You're telling me this man willingly did 20
of them.
Every 6 months plus.
Biannually.
For fun. His taxes would have been a fucking nightmare.
It seemed like he lasted like till just before a probationary period went in.
Ah.
Like he couldn't make it past that. Like he just must have sucked so bad. There's some people that haven't had 20 jobs in their lifetime. This man did it in a matter of years. So, I mean, maybe there's something to be said for that. I think it's not nice things to be said about that, but you know, some people, that's how you roll.
He's an overachiever in that realm. I'll give him that.
But he didn't lose these jobs for any reason other than he sucked, just to put that as professionally as I can. He worked as an optician, a respectable career and one that does take skill, but needless to say, his work history was alarming.
Yeah.
Investigators had actually grown to suspect Ronald when they dug into his finances. Initially, they felt for the guy. How can you not?
Of course, it's this kid.
The man's child died almost in his arms, and he died a violent death in front of his parent. Like, that's horrible. And he seemed to be grief-stricken, and he seemed to be kind of like the teddy bear of a guy who really leaned into his faith to comfort him through this especially challenging time. How many parents do you know that take out specific life insurance policies on their children, though?
None that young.
$10,000 per child in January.
Oh.
Of 1974, and then $20,000 in September of that year, so just the month before, so which was nearly $64,000 then, and $128,000 in 2024.
Holy shit.
So I am not here to judge that. I think having insurance is something that is best to have and never need, then need it and not have it, but consider the optics, pun intended.
Uh-huh.
A man taking out several life insurance policies on children aged 5 and 8 was alarming, especially when they considered the debt that Mr. O'Brien was in, because he was over $100,000 in debt in 1974.
Holy.
Which is a whopping $640,000 today.
For what?
His vehicle was about to be repossessed. The family home was pending foreclosure. He defaulted on several loans. The man was in financial ruin. And whether his wife did or did not know the state of their finances, I don't know. But Ronald knew that it was really bad and it was going to get worse.
Okay.
At 9 a.m. the day after his son's death, like the very next day, Ronald was calling the insurance company wanting to know when he could receive the money by.
Ew.
That was more pressing to him than perhaps the arrangements. Anything to be done, or maybe just being with your fucking wife. Your child died last night. He was calling about the money. His wife actually had no idea about the insurance policies taken out on their kids. She would actually later testify for the prosecution.
Wow. Good for little her.
Peek into the future here. More damning evidence came out, including that Ronald had a customer at his work who was a chemical salesman.
Oh.
And that Ronald had asked this man some pretty concerning questions about cyanide, how much is needed to be fatal, and where might he buy it. A staff member at a chemical supply store said a man had come in asking to purchase some cyanide. Apparently you could do that then.
Wild.
But left when he was told that the minimum amount that he was allowed to purchase was 5 pounds.
Oh.
So just for reference, the 2 inches at the top of a pixie stick was enough to kill like three people.
Right.
And the minimum amount that could be purchased out of this office was 5 pounds.
That's a fuck ton of cyanide.
Well, and that's not to say that that isn't useful in other, like in conjunction with other things, but at its base right there, that is quite lethal. And yeah. he was very discouraged that he'd have to buy 5 pounds because, you know, he didn't need that much. And also, this man couldn't remember much about the guy who tried to purchase this because, I mean, it was weird, but, like, I'm sure he's seen weird before.
He sells cyanide in bulk.
Mm-hmm.
He probably gets some fucking weird questions.
But what he did remember was that this man that came in wore a blue smock that looked kind of like a doctor.
Oh.
And wouldn't you know, that was basically Ronald's uniform.
Would you look at that?
He wore that to work every single day. Further, after a search warrant turned up a knife in the home with powder on it, that powder was confirmed to be the candy in the pixie stick, so it's believed that he used that knife to cut the top off, empty some out, add the poison, and then folded it down and stapled it to close it. Ronald was arrested for the murder of his own son and the attempted murders of 4 other kids, including his 5-year-old daughter, Elizabeth.
That is insane.
It is. It is absolute madness. So, of course, this went to trial.
Well, yeah, because he's innocent.
You know it. In fact, you guessed it. He pled innocent.
When don't they?
He seemed to really enjoy this attention, though. Or at least that's how prosecutor Mike Hinton described him.
Oh.
The ADA Vic Driscoll said in a compelling statement to the jury that Ronald O'Brien had sacrificed his son on the altar of greed.
That is a great line.
What a fucking delivery. What a theatrical performance. To walk up to the jury bench and say, this man sacrificed his son on the altar of greed. Chills. I know. A snippet from the Victoria Advocate, a newspaper around there, said testimony was heard from, quote, police, a pathologist, O'Brien's former boss, a brother-in-law, a sister-in-law, insurance agents, and a loan company executive.
A loan company exec.
Mm-hmm. I should also reiterate that his wife, Dani, did testify against him as well, stating that she had no idea about these insurance policies.
Right.
So she did not know what her and her husband stood to gain from the death of their own children.
Right.
But she also said the night Timothy died, Halloween night, when Timothy was allowed one piece of candy, it was true. He did want the lollipop first, but it was like, no, that's going to take you like 40
forever.
Minutes. We're not doing that. He actually didn't choose the pixie stick himself. Ronald said, why don't you have this pixie stick?
Oh. Well, that makes sense because no reasonable parent would say, we're right before bedtime, take 21 inches of sugar and shove that down your pie hole.
But the lollipop was too much.
I know.
Please. Then his brother-in-law, I think it was his brother-in-law and his sister-in-law, mm-hmm. said that the same day as Timothy's funeral, so I mean within a week of Halloween, Ronald, instead of focusing on anything else, just spoke of the big vacation he was going to take his wife on, like his wife and daughter, with this insurance money. Now granted, they are underwater in debt like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe that's to save the home. Or the roof above their heads. But okay, Fiji sounds great.
But the money that he was going, I don't want to say make, but the money he was going to be given after Timothy died was like going to make the smallest of dents in that debt anyway.
Yeah.
That maybe he just figured F it. But if the motive here is money, that really matters.
Yes, it does.
Prosecutor Hinton is quoted as saying, he ought to be damned for what he did. Nobody has anything to gain except the defendant. I don't want you to forget for 1 minute that he wanted to take those other children with him.
Yeah.
And that's true. Essentially, these other kids were collateral.
And that's wild to me. And don't get me wrong. Like, I'm under no circumstances saying that what he did was right. It makes sense to me. If he's going to be a greedy fuck, that's how he'd go about it with his own kids. But what do you have to gain from the other 3 kids that you tried to kill?
Deniability. It wasn't me. It must have been the person who lived in this house or the random house they picked it up at, because look, it happened to other kids, not just mine.
Right.
Maybe, I mean, that it could be as simple as that. Just.
Yeah, but it's just so fucking reckless.
Oh, of course it is. But it's okay. The jury thought so too, because the 10 men and 2 women on that jury deliberated for only 46 minutes.
Yes. That's like record timing.
Like they went in there and they're like guilty as fuck, right?
They're
and
like, they're guilty, like, no?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, no, we'll make them sweat for a few minutes. You want lunch or what do we want to do with that?
They broke at 11:30 and they're like, oh, if we're here till noon, we still get the pizza that they're going to get us.
We just got to stretch this out a little bit. But yes, that 46 minutes was ripe with conversation and real debate. I'm kidding. No, they all agreed.
Yeah.
Guilty. Guilty, 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 guilty on all charges. And he was sentenced to death.
Oh.
Mike Hinton, again, who prosecuted O'Brien, said, quote, "He's the man that ruined Halloween for the whole world. There's a lot... There's a lot of leftover feelings and concerns among parents who were just kids then." So meaning it changed their lives. They were classmates of Timothy. And when they grew up and raised their own kids, they still didn't want their kids trick-or-treating because of what they grew up with.
Well, that and also I'm sure it has such a huge impact on, like, when I grew up, my parents checked the wrappers of every piece of candy that I ate from trick-or-treating. And like, not just for the future, but also very much for that year. Like, nobody got their Halloween candy.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had to go bring it to the police. So it was like an entire event. It wasn't just mom and dad said no this year.
Exactly.
And then your friend died.
And it was horrible. And you live in this small town where something like this hadn't happened before. Right. And now you think there's a boogeyman out there who's trying to murder kids.
And then it comes out that it was your friend's dad. Like, that's an entirely different piece of news to try to process.
Absolutely. Bill Lanier, who was a Pasadena police officer at the time, he worked on this case in 1974. In fact, I think he was about to come off of his shift and he heard the call come in that there was a dead child, and he like went right back into work. So he worked this case and he said, quote, "It affected me. Every Halloween I think about him.
Oh.
He's a despicable man and his whole life was a lie."
Wow.
And he went on to say more about this whole, like, his life is a lie thing, because, I mean, this officer really despised this man. How could you not? But he also investigated this case. He never forgot how little Timothy looked on the exam table in the corner. You know, those were things that stuck with him his entire career. And he was a younger officer at the time.
Yeah.
But he did say, like, again, in terms of his life being a lie, that, you know, he was this figurehead in his church and he was, you know, supposedly a man of God. And there were so many people of God in that community who just really found comfort in their religion, and how frustrating it was for somebody to like claim to be that, like a wolf in sheep's clothing, really sort of use that to like prey on other people and to just chameleon himself as a good person when he couldn't be further from that.
Right.
And so there was a lot of frustration in that, especially in the church community, who were like, we don't claim that. We don't claim him. But, you know, also he was a respectable optician. He had a home. He had the, you know, 2 kids, white picket fence, kind of seemingly incredible life. Right. And on the flip side, it's a man scheming, taking out policies on his kids so that he can be the one to take them away so that he can cash in on their death.
Right.
Like, those things didn't compute.
No.
Other inmates that were residents with Mr. O'Brien nicknamed him the Candy Man, and they hated him.
Yeah.
His community, though, called him the man who killed Halloween, and because the Candy Man is usually... in the true crime world, most linked to like Dean Corll. I'm not going to call him that because I don't want to confuse anybody, but know that within the prison walls, that's how he was known. But to everybody else on the outside, he was the man who killed Halloween. Despite his conviction, though, Ronald O'Brien maintained his innocence until the very end. According to Cron writer Heather Nicholson, his last meal consisted of a T-bone steak, medium to well done, French fries, and ketchup, whole kernel corn, sweet peas, lettuce and tomato salad with egg and French dressing, iced tea, sweetener, saltines, rolls, and a Boston cream pie. First of all, I didn't realize they feasted for the last meal, first of all.
Well, you gotta carbo load for the big day.
Apparently. But what a fucking meal. Some people never have that in their lives, and this man is on death row for murdering his child.
No, and honestly, I do think it's... Okay. I do think it's more than he deserves. But... It reminds me of that movie, The Menu.
Yeah, right? Want a burger.
Yes, and he's like, one of the guys is like, this has to be a joke. Can we just get some bread? And the little assistant woman is like, no, you will get less than what you want and more than what you deserve. Mm-hmm. And like shoves him into the table or whatever. And it just reminds me a lot of like, it sounds really nice, but then... And think with me here. If he had the ability to do this, he had the ability to get pretty much anything for his last meal. And he said, give me a well-done steak with peas?
Okay, true. The peas are throwing me off, I'll be honest. Like, I'm like, why do you hate yourself? I mean, you well should, done. But...
I want a nice steak. Just fucking ruin it. And then also give me some peas.
See, I disagree because I'm a child... And I cannot have, if the steak is even a little bit pink, I'm like, get the fuck away from me. I want the steak that you forgot you left on and it's a hockey puck. Throw it to me, babe. I got it. I got you. Seriously.
Like, I'm going to chew on this for the next 3 hours.
Like, I cannot do steak that like has red or anything like that. My mom can have it like medium rare. Like she can love that. My dad's more like me, I'd say. And... My husband is like me where it's like, I don't want it pink. So I'm like, yeah, we're like, cook the shit out of it. We'll have it.
I don't want it living. I just don't want a hockey puck.
I mean, there's a way. Well, it's a fine line. It usually ends up being pretty dry. But I'm, you know what? Damn him. Good he had to eat peas, okay? Because peas were like my trauma food where I was like, I had to eat it. And I would be like, please no, Mary. I don't want to have peas. But it was like you ate what was on your plate. Right. Yeah, yeah. So I hate peas. I bet I'd like them now if I had them, but...
Depends on the type, but yeah.
But I was a kid. Anyway, this guy chose my like least favorite thing that I pick out of stuff if it's in there.
Yep.
I won't have it. And he's like, give me that. Give me he's two like, of them.
I want that.
Fuck this man.
Also...
Fuck him.
Okay, sorry. I don't want to jump ahead. Tell me what happens next.
Well, of course he was, again, due to be put to death and... No, I'm being serious. He was put to death, so I'm not faking you out here. But in his last words, because, you know, they can make a statement, he maintained his claim of innocence. He said the death penalty is wrong, but it doesn't mean the whole system is wrong.
Oh, give her.
Thanks. Therefore, I forgive all, and I do mean all, those who have been involved in my death. Also, to anyone I have offended in any way during my 39 years... I pray and ask your forgiveness, just as I forgive anyone who offended me in any way. May God bless you, and may God's blessings be always yours.
Wow.
What a crock of shit.
Peach.
He was just really trying to hold on to, like, any shred of him not being. And he's like, and you know what? I forgive you, too. You've upset me. It's like, I didn't fucking ask, did you?
It reminds me of, like, going to church as a kid. I was there a lot. And you hear this like, I forgive you because God forgave me. And it's like, you forgive me because I forgave you.
No. I forgive you because you forgave me, but only because I forgave you.
Yes. And you're only allowed to forgive me because I'm the better person. And I said, I'm okay with you. For now.
Just hate it.
Fucking guy. How did they put him to death? Do you know? Was it by cyanide?
I wish, right?
Ugh.
No, that wasn't the case.
I do wish. I think if you murder your own child at 8 years old by cyanide, that it is just desserts, baby, and not the Boston cream pie. Although, fuck it. Put it in a pixie stick.
Hmm.
Maybe it is dessert.
Ooh, I like that. that statement that he made, royally pissed off everybody, as Good. You could imagine, because it is ridiculous. But this was the kind of bullshit that the prosecutors were trying to hone in on, because he tried to use religion as a way to hide, to appear better than he was, and that he really wasn't a man of God, but he tried to gain the sympathy of those who were. And because a man of God wouldn't kill, and a man of God wouldn't have killed his own son in the name of money, and nearly kill other children as well, it just, you know, was very clear. He is not a man of God, but he tried to play that of like, well, you know, God wouldn't want us to kill each other.
No.
So you shouldn't. Like, he didn't come out and say it, but he's like, I have to forgive you because God would want me to, even though I really think you should reconsider this.
And he might not forgive you, though. I do hope my blessing, I hope he listens to that, because, you know, that's how those power dynamics work.
He just tried to, like, he tried to use religion in a way that always frustrates me when these assholes do that, because of course they don't subscribe to any kind of religion. It is purely just a way to cause harm and not look as bad doing it, basically. Yeah. But again, like I said, the other inmates hated him. He killed a kid, and that is a big no-no in prison. They had actually their own celebration, for lack of a better way of putting it, when his sentence was coming to a close. Like, they partied it up while he was put to death, because they were so happy that the child killer was dead.
Aww.
Before he died, an 18-year-old girl named Kim, and her last name is out there, and I'm hoping that she's better than she was at 18, so I'm not going to out her in this way, but she actually wept very loudly before he was put to death and said, Ron, I'll miss you. They had apparently been corresponding for about 6 months via letters while he was in prison before his death. I'm not really sure what the nature of those letters were, but she seemed pretty upset. I don't know what that relationship entailed, but it was something.
Seems inappropriate.
To the very least, he's double her age. And more married. Importantly, though, well, no, Danine divorced him.
Oh, good.
Thank God. But that was the least of Kim's problems, because he's a child killer. So that'll do it.
Also, like, I understand being young and wide-eyed and bushy-tailed and so full of this hope that people are innately good, that the system is flawed, that it was an issue sort of on the administrative side and not on his side. So I don't really hold it against her. She still seems young enough that I'm like, honey.
I know.
But also, honey.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know. But the moment you've all been waiting for, Ronald Clark O'Brien was put to death by lethal injection 10 years later, after the murder of his child, after exhausting every single appeal, and he died March 31st, 1984.
Wow, so his daughter was 15.
Mm-hmm.
His son would have been the same age as the girl he was corresponding with.
Mm-hmm.
And there's so much time and room for growth in there that he just shat on.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely shat on.
Oh, yeah. And, I mean, yeah, would it have sucked? Yeah, you made bad decisions and you have to deal with the repercussions of it, but you could have gotten through that as a family.
Yeah.
And it did not require this.
No, get a financial advisor. Go on a freaking budget.
But what's funny here is that on the day that he was due to be put to death, and of course this is a big ordeal, this is in the papers, people knew about this, especially in this community. I mean, this whole community had been rocked by what happened, and, you know, throughout the state of Texas, and 300 people gathered outside of the prison in Huntsville yelling trick or treat as he died.
Wow.
Yes. Many gave out candy.
Wow.
Right. And some, and I don't condone this, threw it at anti-death penalty protesters. So, you know, for just as many people as that were there for, like, the celebration of him being put to death, there were others there that were like, death penalty is wrong, and like they were protesting against it. So there was like a little bit of like a candy war going on too during this trick-or-treating, while inside the prisoners are like holding a celebration because this man's being put to death. So it really kind of united a lot and started a lot of other things at the same time that you wouldn't expect. But
no, I wouldn't.
Dainin remarried, thank God. And her new husband formally adopted Elizabeth as his own.
Good.
The tears shed on the day of Ronald's death were not for him, but for 8-year-old Timothy.
Of course.
In an article by The Statesman, attorney Hinton was interviewed about the case in 2016. So it was more than 30 years after it happened.
Wow.
He remembers it like it was yesterday. He said, quote, "I never get tired of talking about that sorry ass son of a bitch," which I just love.
King.
But he gets choked up thinking of Timothy's body on the autopsy table, and he just says, he's so young. He was so young.
Yeah, 8.
And he's another one who was very scarred by this case as well, just in how not bloody, gruesome, horrible in that way, but in every other way that it was.
Yeah.
This case reignited the fear many parents have about their children's Halloween candy being tampered with. We've seen it ebb and flow over the years, even in our lifetime, whether it be poison people are worried about, or razor blades, syringes, drugs, whatever it is, the fear has been there.
Yeah.
And in each and every case we cover, we at least try to analyze what our takeaways can be. How can we, in the face of evil and in spite of their crimes, be better for it? What can we learn? What can we do differently to protect against these things happening again? Because what else can we hold on to?
That's about it.
I don't think the answer here is to live in fear. That's never what we're going to encourage, and living in fear isn't really living, is it? But I think the answer is somewhere in leading with kindness, but also vigilance, logic, and preparedness. Don't scare your children into thinking the world is an evil place. But perhaps discuss that there are scary things and scary people, and the importance of protecting yourself and those you care about. And if it feels wrong, it probably is.
And if it looks not normal, if you think someone had to get creative, talk to mom and dad. Because ultimately, kids are resilient. Kids are innovative. Kids are doing these things on the daily. The amount of creativity that I see in kids is insane. It's like, well, I couldn't reach that. So what I did was I grabbed 3 books that were about this size. I put it on the step stool, and then I stood on my tiptoe on top of that, and then I got it. Because that's how they adapt. That's how they have to live. They're constantly being creative and innovative and resilient. That's what they do. So for a kid to see a stapled pixie stick, those alarms might not go off.
No, but for a kid to be given a pixie stick by his dad,
right,
might look differently. And so it's like, I don't think our listeners are plotting this, which is why I'm not speaking to the people who are trying to harm their kids.
Right.
I'm speaking to those who care about their kids, who want to, you know, not terrify their children, but also not have this like entirely overly confident, naive child who's going to trust the stranger who might give them candy, or trust somebody else who might. And that if you know an adult is behaving strangely around you, it's strange behavior danger, not stranger danger. And
that's exactly what I mean. Things like this, when people are giving you something that you put in your body, if people are giving you gifts and you don't really know them, even if it's trick-or-treating or otherwise, if it looks kind of weird, just talk to mom and dad first. And that's it. And that's okay. Adults shouldn't have to get crafty when they're handing out Halloween candy. Those come in a big bag, like a mixed bag, so that you can get the M&Ms and the Twix. Okay?
This case is not one of a sniffly goblin-like monster who set out to kill kids. It's one of greed to the highest degree. A greed all-consuming that this monster of a man was willing to kill one of his own children for profit. And worse yet, he was willing to let other children die as collateral. The callousness and malice in him is staggering, but I bring this case to you now, this week, Halloween week, because if you are taking your children trick-or-treating, or you know someone who is, maybe you'll take that split second to look over the candy first, and maybe make sure that others are aware of these things. And it's not to terrify, but it is just to inform and just be prepared.
Yeah.
Because the vast majority of times it is safe. But if you have that feeling or you think that doesn't look right, give that a second thought. Don't dismiss it. Don't dismiss your gut feeling. You kind of have to roll with that sometimes. And I think, you know, take a second to look over the candy first. Make sure it hasn't been opened and resealed in some way. And if it looks like it might be, maybe throw that piece away. You've got plenty.
Right.
If the wrapper has started coming off, just get rid of it. Safety first. Keep an eye on your kids. Put the phones away. But of course, also have fun.
Well, and this story is nothing else if not a great reminder that most of the time, someone who would want to do something to your kids, there's a motive. And if you're going down a line in a street full of other kids going down a line in a street, you're probably safe. But that second look, that second thought, it just makes you feel better going to sleep that night saying, okay, all right, no staples in our pixie sticks.
Yeah. I mean, I remember going trick-or-treating with my parents and getting home and like it was, my candy was looked over. It wasn't like, it wasn't inspected with a magnifying glass, but yeah, my family had eyes on that. I'm also, you know, I was very lucky. I had great parents. I have great parents. I have good family and pretty worldly in that way, I guess. Like, without making me afraid, also was like, we're going to take a look at that. We're going to have eyes on that. And that, I feel like that was a, I think I turned out all right.
Yeah.
I mean, I say as I have a true crime podcast, maybe not. I don't know. You tell me.
But I think you're good.
Well, thank you. You're entirely biased. But I wanted to bring this case up because obviously I think if we covered this case any other time of the year, I don't think the message would have been as strong. And I think that this is an important case to tell. And this is timely as we head into the holidays. You're going to get a lot of things. And I don't know. Just look at it, damn it. That's all I'm asking you to do.
When I was a kid, my brother and I, or whoever I was trick-or-treating with, but most of those years it was my brother and I, and we would go out, we'd come home, and then we'd do the haul. You spread it all out. You're like, what did I get? You're like, oh, I got 7 Twix. I got 3 Twizzlers. I got 2 of the good Twizzlers. Like, and you know, there are different ones. But you go through it all. You trade whatever you want. You're like, ugh, Milk Duds, get away. I want your M&Ms.
Oh, Whoppers, get.
Right? And so you do all your little trades. And then my parents, we'd be able to pick out however many pieces for dessert. And they'd look at them then. And they'd say, oh, okay, looks good. Have fun. And that was it. That's all it had to be, was just, let me look at that real quick. Okay.
My parents might have, during their inspection, found ones that maybe they wanted.
And that and they said, ooh,
gonna make sure this
can
is
you
good.
Go pick another piece really quick.
I gotta go.
It can be the same one.
Check on this one.
Yeah, I gotta run tests in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So yeah. But I thank you guys for hanging out with us on this wild ride. Of course,
we're
very thankful that Ronald O'Brien is no longer able to harm any other kids, and that thankfully no other child was harmed physically, although I am sure emotionally.
Oh, certainly.
But that Danine was able to move on, and that Elizabeth had a father figure that wasn't one that tried to kill her.
Yeah, much better than the last one.
Much. Yes. We don't even know him, and we already think
Who?
He's better. Exactly.
But we're so excited. We would love if you guys would share some of your fun Halloween traditions or stories. And if your pod pets have a Halloween costume, my God, I want to see your cat dressed up as a UPS guy. I've been trying to get my cat to dress up like one for years. He will murder me before I ever get that chance.
I'm so in need of some pod pet pictures.
Please
send them your way. My heart needs them. I love seeing everyone's happy pets. We just...
And
we're
it
just animal lovers here, and we got to give them the best lives we can because they're better than people, you know?
It's so true. And they get costumes, and I really want to see them.
Yeah, cute little costumes.
We hope you guys have such a fun and such a safe Halloween.
Have so much fun, and get ready for, like, Michael Bublé to start to defrost. We're going to be Christmasing it up soon, if you can believe it.
I know it. If you actually go outside and just take a second in the silence, you can hear the distant echoes of Mariah Carey defrosting.
Yeah.
Every now and then you'll just get a, and you're like, oh. Not yet. Oh, but soon.
Was that a...
But if you guys wanted to see this asshat, if you wanted to see the people, the places, the things that we talked about, all of that good, or if you wanted to send us an email with maybe one of your cool pod pet costumes, something, I don't know, a kind word or wish for our sweet cookie or anything like that, you could definitely email us as well. You would find both of those places linked in our link tree below. So that would be our Instagram and our email. You'd also be able to find our Venmo and PayPal and a Redbubble if you wanted a little sticker or piece of merch. So check it out. But if not, happy Halloween, trick or treat. And if I look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
I'm going to need you to be Mariah Carey again one more time.
Trick or treat, smell my feet, give me something good to eat. And if you don't, I don't care. I'll pull down your underwear. Bye.
You.
Okay, now you can come out, Mariah.